where that button was.
Live stream.
Hello, everyone. I think we are live. Welcome to Creating the Future's Integrity Team meeting for October of 2024. I'm Hilde Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and I'm really, really glad you all are here. Let's start out by just sharing who you are, where you are. A land acknowledgement is especially important today in the US. It is Indigenous Peoples Day, formerly known as Columbus Day. Let's even not even unpack that. That would be our whole meeting today, unpacking that. But it's good to have you all with us and just share something that's meaningful in your life. Who wants to start? Go, John.
Good morning. I am John Epps. I am in Southern California on the land unceded by the Yamava Nation. I am excited to be here today just because whenever we get together, just good things happen in my head. So I just like being around this group of people. I think what's happening exciting in my life, I feel like more opportunity to ask some direction and support to organizations in my area is opening up for me. And so I'm excited about that and looking forward to it. And I want to thank Angie because I got her book and guide, and I'm using that with my class. So that's my good story today.
Awesome. Awesome. Oh, I love that book. I wish I was teaching just so I
That's
could teach
awesome.
that book.
Yeah, well, we can try to arrange something. Yeah. Can I go next so I can build on that? That's awesome news, John. And I'll start by saying hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. I'm in Hartford, Connecticut, which is also the land of the Eastern Pequot, Golden Hill, Paugusett, Lenape, the Mashantucket, Pequot, Mohegan, Nipmuc, and Scaticoke. It's a lot of tribes have been in this area and a lot of history. I also want to give my, I guess, exciting news that the next edition of that book is coming out soon, Hilde, too, hopefully in the next month-ish, by before the ArNova conference happens. So there's a second edition to that Reframing Nonprofits book, and Hilde has a chapter in it. And we also actually, John, you got the, I think I sent you the updated instructor manual for the new
Yes, ma'am.
as well. So there's some really awesome new chapters in there, and I'm really excited about having that come out soon.
Okay.
And
Now I'm excited. Who wants to go next?
I can go. So I am Justin Pollock in Washington, D.C., and land upon which the Natashkank tribe flourished and lived. My exciting news is just 3 days ago, my daughter, who is a senior, accepted a scholarship and offer to row at Michigan State. So that's the first time I've ever been through anything like that. And so that's kind of cool.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Congratulations. Hey.
To her, not me. I didn't really do anything. So.
Share our congratulations with her. And I wouldn't say you didn't do anything. I see what an enthusiastic rowing dad you are. Yeah. Who else? What's going on?
I'll go next. I'm Jess. I am in Buffalo, New York, which is an area where Onondaga, Haudenosaunee, and this is a new one that I'd learned, Wanroe Ronan, have lived or currently live too. And a meaningful piece is my next door neighbor had started using food pantries over the summer because she and her family were struggling with money over the summer. And what I've learned is that she's been any of the food that she gets that she doesn't either use or need, she hands out to neighbors, other neighbors in on our street. So that's really,
Oh.
really, really lovely.
That's really lovely. It's awesome. Thank you. Carl, what's going on in your world?
Hi, everyone. I'm Carl, Carl Wilding. I'm not in the US, as you can probably tell by my accent. I'm in the UK, about 20 miles north of London. So I'm afraid I don't have a land acknowledgement, other than perhaps to acknowledge that maybe some of my ancestors were, well, they were taking lands away from people, I think is probably the nicest thing that I can say about it. The reason I was going last, LD, is that I've been trying to rack my brains about what can I say that's on a par with what everyone else has said about awesome, and I'm not sure I can, other than maybe just to sort of say it's a relatively new term. We're still only a few weeks into the new academic year, and I'm sort of teaching. I mean, this is still relatively sort of new to me. And I just want to say how much I enjoy it and how invigorating it is to sort of have people come and share their ideas and sort of their thinking and have conversations about where are we going in terms of the sector. And I, not that I'm suggesting anyone else on here thinks like this, but it amazes me how some of my academic colleagues don't like teaching. They just want to do research, and it's the most fulfilling thing.
It is. It is. That is awesome. That is really awesome. Dimitri, I will hand over the mic.
Yeah, that's okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to all the wonderful people who are here today. I am Dimitri Petropoulos, located in very sunny, very hot Tucson, Arizona. We've had like many days into what would have been a normally fall that feels more like summer. So it's an interesting place that is the unceded lands of the Tohono O'odham, and the Pascua-Yaqui peoples. Things I'm excited about, two things. One, I've been working on the back end of a podcast that Hildy is going to be doing. So getting all the tech stuff ready. So when she starts I've heard some of these really amazing interviews that she's already done on folks. So I'm very excited about that. And that is totally awesome. I have a second awesome. And the second awesome is my comfort around the world as it's been crazy.
Delayed.
So it is my new little grandkids. Hopefully you guys can see this. This is Nico and Athena. Nico is very new, but love this point in their lives where he's being very interactive now and can sort of explore the world. And she is in control of the world and everything that happens. So. This is one of the things that makes all the craziness that's going on in the world kind of okay, is having and knowing that these wonderful children are out there and growing, and hopefully will make the world a lot better than we've made it. So, all right, now to get out of this. Go.
We have all the machinations of our being in the same room, except Dimitri's got his head in the clouds today. So I am really, really thrilled to be here. Obviously, I am also in Tucson, Arizona, considering we're next to each other in the unceded lands of the Tohono O'odham and the Pascua-Yaqui people. And fortunately, those people are still here. So they were not annihilated. They are still here, and we still get to learn from them all the time, which is really, really important, really incredible. We've got a phenomenal, it's the first time this position has been held by an Indigenous person. Our county recorder, who is in charge of elections and voting. And for the first time, our little I voted stickers, which I'm hoping to be wearing in the next couple of days, are both in English, Spanish, and O'odham, which is just, it again is one of those little things that says why representation matters, that to just be reminded that We're not the only ones here. Yeah. There it is, Dimitri. Thank you. I have many things that are meaningful in my life right now. I am desperately waiting for summer to be over. When Dimitri says it's been hotter than normal, it's been 102, 104. A week ago, it was 108 in October. Carl, we're talking 40, 41 in October. Yeah, yeah. So I am like, for the first time, the mornings have been cool enough to walk. Yeah, yeah. So just as others are experiencing climate change in different ways, we're experiencing it here. I from what I understand, normally we have about 60 days out of the year that are over 100, and we've had over 100 days that are over 100. Anybody wants to argue it's not real, come live with us for a little bit. I'm so excited about this podcast, and I'll be sharing more of it as it gets up and running. We are hoping to launch it on the 29th or 30th of this month. And in the olden days, I had a podcast back in from 2010 to 2014. And I interviewed people from all over the world asking the same question, which is basically what creates change? And we talk about this so much in this group here that when it comes to learning about social change, it is a lot easier to learn how to raise money and manage your board than it is to learn actually what creates change. And so talking to experts and on the ground people, community organizers, academics, I mean, just a huge range, historians of when you see change happening, what's creating change. And so I'm really excited about this. This is part of the legacy that we want to leave. We want to leave a library of all of these interviews as part of everything that we're leaving when we're done. We really felt that it was important rather than just having the ones from 2014 to update it, because that it's amazing that 2014 was 10 years ago, to update it with new interviews. So I'm just really very excited. And the other thing I'm excited about is Dimitri and I are going to take a vacation. We are heading back to back east. We will be, my brother is having a birthday, and so fortunately he's not watching this because I'm a surprise for him. And he is in Hoboken, New Jersey. My best friend growing up is in Connecticut, and Dimitri and I are going to get to see Angie in Connecticut, which we're very excited about. So yeah, that's coming up. But things around here are very, very busy and really exciting. So I'm glad you all are here today. I'm also really, really grateful. And John, you are part of this grateful. I'm grateful to you and Shadow for the notes that you all provide. It's so interesting because, you know, Dimitri and I have been doing this podcast and we're looking at transcripts and we're looking at you know, the AI does transcripts and does notes and stuff. And I'm looking and I'm going, you know what? There is something about having a human create these notes. I've been looking at all these transcripts and all this stuff that's generated by AI, and it's made me more appreciative of the stuff that you, John, and Shadow are doing. So thank you for that.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you.
It's very cool. And especially being as I was reading through Shadow's notes this morning and getting ready. We got a lot done last time. We talked a lot about bringing everybody back up to speed. What we're talking about is having a process for referring consultants, because at Creating the Future, we're not a consulting firm. We get requests from folks for, could you facilitate our group? Could you do some training for our group? And we've had a very ad hoc, makes it sound even more official than it is, approach to referring folks. And especially as we're in this period where we're going to be out there a whole lot more, we know that we're going to have a lot more people asking for this kind of stuff. When we met last time, we started in on the first couple of questions of catalytic thinking. We asked who would be affected by our having a consultant referral process. And we asked for each of those groups what having a process could make possible for them. And what we'll be diving into today is what needs to be in place for those wonderful outcomes to actually be achievable, for them to be reality. So let's dig in. And for anybody that is watching, or for you all who are on the screen here, if you haven't had a chance to take a look at the notes that Shadow put together, they are online in our blog, maybe one or two back from the top one. When we talked about who would be affected, we named obviously the consultants who are going to be referred, obviously the people who are asking for consultants, and obviously creating the future as the referring entity. But we also talked about the communities who will be served by those clients, as well as the educational community, as we sort of put it, faculty working in various capacities, whether it's at universities or other educational settings, that might be referring. They don't see themselves as consultants, but they may be somebody that we would want to refer work to. When we started digging into what this could make possible, what I thought we might do today is just go group by group and look at what we said having a process could make possible for them, and just look at, for consultants, for instance, what do they need to know in order to achieve that potential? What do they need to feel, et cetera, and then go to the next group and the next group. So let's start with consultants. What we said was that having a referral process, a referral system, would provide some credibility to those consultants if they were on that list. Ongoing educational opportunities, obviously a revenue generator for anyone who is getting referred and gets a gig from that. But the one that really resonated with me deeply was making clear the relationship and expectations. So if our process is clarifying the relationship and expectations, is in some way providing, ensuring revenue to that person, bringing them credibility and ongoing educational opportunities, but especially making clear the relationship and expectations. When it comes to those expectations, what do those consultants need to know? What do they need to know and understand in terms of the expectations? And maybe that has to do more with talking first about creating the future and what are our expectations. But I think that's probably the most important, is if this is really a relationship between creating the future, you know, I mean, we're sort of the go-between between the prospective client and the consultants. We would have expectations of the people that we refer. What do those consultants need to know in terms of you know, so several of you are consultants. What would you need to know in terms of what are creating the future's expectations?
Well, I think, you know, as so many of these conversations circle back, since we are so foundationally built on the values and what those values look like in action, I think that's one of the clear sets of expectations, is that people feel comfortable and confident understanding what it means to actually behave in alignment with the values. So, you know, if creating the future's, you know, reputation is going to be linked, that is really a prerequisite, I would say, from the creating a future side, is that, you know, we need to feel comfortable, or whomever's making the referral needs to feel comfortable that the, you know, referee really knows that. So I think that goes both ways. And then, you know, I think then the next piece too is, you know, at least a level of comfort with catalytic thinking. I mean, we know it's not a perfect, you know, prescribed system, but I think the, you know, at its core, recognizing that this is an inquiry-based engagement as opposed to an advice and prescribing type engagement. So
What would I want to dig a little bit deeper into both of those. What would those consultants, what would it take for them to know what the values are and to know if they're in alignment with them? What would need to be in place for them to know that?
This is my wheelhouse and the place I spend so much time. I think first they need to be able to, I think, demonstrate and express how they align their own work with their values. Like that, just as a practice, I think is the first piece, is, you know, how fluent do they feel? How can they speak, or, you know, if I'm that consultant, how well can I communicate how my values influence and how my day-to-day work aligns with values? So I think that's kind of the real foundational piece, so that there is just an understanding of even the language that we are talking when we say values alignment or values in action.
So if I'm a consultant, how would I know if I'm in alignment? And I'm just asking you, Justin, everybody.
Well, I would say when you have a really hard decision and you're toiling and there's a light bulb that goes off in your head and says, well, if I really believe X, the answer would be this. And not that it only shows up in difficult times, because I think it shows up in the positive, but I think someone's ability to really be able to articulate that, the challenge actually of following your values in action, because I think if anyone just says, oh yeah, I do that, and can't really speak to the real complexity of doing that, I would be suspect.
Well,
I don't know if John was first, but no, okay. In terms of that, following on from Justin, and I agree with everything that he just said, my sense would be that our expectation is that they should know what our values are, i.e. they should have read mm-hmm. our values and ideally thought about them a little bit, because I don't think we can just expect someone to sort of guess what our values are or sort of know what. So maybe there is an expectation upon us to have some sort of onboarding process for any consultant that we are going to refer people to. I've got a couple of other thoughts as well, but they're not about values, so I'll shut up for now.
Hold on to them though. Don't lose them. John?
You know, I wanted to let Carl go first, so thank you, Carl. But what I was thinking also, I just helped an organization hire a new executive director. It's the third time I've helped this organization. Second time I've helped this organization. No, third time, I'm sorry. And one of the things I think was really important was to do a little bit of prospecting on their background and get some referral stuff. You know, I think a little bit of what you've done speaks to who you are. So I think we'd want to be able to have three or four people who say, yeah, these are, you know, this is somebody and here's why I think that. But I think a little bit of that idea that previous work may be a good indicator of potential future actions, I think that would be really important, because if they got people saying good things about them, then that's good. That's good for us. And if they got people who are not so happy, then not so good for them.
Yeah, Dimitri.
Participation in our very open processes. You know, just to, you know, are you really interested in this? And I think that can also, by virtue of that, reflect the values, that this is where you want to spend your time and energy.
Sorry, at the risk of maybe like going back or repeating something, but I really liked what Justin said about kind of like the complexity. I like the idea of like ethical dilemma or some kind of like where you have something clashing or you had to really think through, because like he mentioned, and I know like comes up a lot, this is not a one, there's not like a one pathway to any, like we have a frame, it's a workflow. It's like a, you know, we kind of go in and out of things when doing this work with people. So, or with ourselves. So like being able to talk through, think through when there might be clashing, when there, that ability, I think, is so important, because none of what we do is clean and clear and linear when we're talking about working with people and people being affected, right? Like, I'm a social worker, right? So we think about like systems and how there's all these people in a system of so many different systems, and you can just keep spreading it out, right? So I really think that being able to work through those like kinds of, yeah, it's so important for this.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah. I like the framing of ethical dilemmas. You know, one of the things that's interesting whenever I have these kinds of conversations is that it's so almost reflexive for us to come back to how will we as the organization know if a consultant is walking the talk or is familiar with catalytic thinking and et cetera. It's very reflexive for us to ask, how will we find out? You know, we have an application, or we ask them this question or whatever. The consultant who's being referred, and how will I know? Because if I'm coming to a group, I don't know. I think my values are aligned, but how will I know? I think I understand catalytic thinking, but how am I sure of that? Putting ourselves in the mindset of the consultant who wants to be on the list, let's say, how will I know? What would I see in myself that lets me know that I'm aligned with creating the future's values? And yes, absolutely, they would. I love the fact that we need to have an onboarding process and help them see the values, know what our values are. But if I'm coming in, I've been through a couple of classes at Creating the Future. I've taken all of the online classes. I think this is me, but I'm a little nervous. I don't know. How will I know?
If they're not a little nervous, they're not a good fit. I think that's a really challenging one. I mean, it's really getting at that self-reflection and sort of the, I think, both the confidence and the humility that go into, that I think are baked into catalytic thinking just in general. You know, I think as, like, I'm trying to go back to the early days of my encounter, I think a lot of it is the ability to map practices or so, not that, like, you know, again, it's not a prescriptive proprietary thing that you learn and get certified in. It really is, you know, so much of what catalytic thinking and decision-making is pulling together things that the human brain does intuitively. Like, it's not like we're creating a new way of thinking. We're actually tapping into, I think, very germane ways of thinking. But I guess the comes from feeling like I understand the progression of it, that I understand the flow, that I understand the rationale and how that I do. So either it's ways in which I find meaning in things, or it is ways that I engage in others to learn, I'm going a little bit off track, but if it's not a new thought, it doesn't really matter what framework you use. And I think we're really seeing that. It doesn't matter how you got there. I mean, I'm working with a group. They said, you know, we just used AI to generate a strategic plan for us. And they did it. And I looked at it and I go, yeah, like you got exactly what a strategic plan is, quote unquote, supposed to look like. And that's what AI will give you, or a version that's there. And I think a vast majority of consulting does that too. So I do think there is something that is rooted in that idea of creating change, which creating change fundamentally requires different behaviors, different understanding. And so as a practitioner, that's how I would know. You know, I have my hands on something that I genuinely feel like when I engage with the pieces of catalytic thinking, the ideas, the things that are germane to it, that I feel like there's discovery, there's newness, there's change going on.
Yeah. Well, you've done what you usually do, Justin. My head's exploding. I've got three different directions.
So I'm be on a peer hotline, peer counseling hotline. And it was like part academic, part like you're actually like in a student organization, student group, like on a hotline, right? So we had actually took classes. So the first semester was just learning how to be on the hotline, but a big portion of it was understanding active listening and moving through all the parts of active listening. And we just had to do it over and over, role playing over and over and over again, with just different, like with our group. And I remember it took a while to not like, to kind of sit and summarize, we're not going to push for a solution orient. Like we had to, it was so uncomfortable and so difficult for a lot of us, but we had to keep doing it and doing it, doing it. I remember like, I think it was about half a semester, maybe more, where finally it clicked. It was like, oh, okay. Like we're able to now move, flow through these different like tools of active listening, and then it will eventually get us or that person. But we can just kind of keep moving through this. And I feel like this is kind of what we're talking about here, is like, how do we kind of demonstrate, how do we learn how to, or how can people show us that they know how to move through the process? And I just think back to like us having to role play constantly when we did that, because there's no clear one way. It's just kind of work.
Yeah. Brilliant. Absolutely. And it gets to the question that I was thinking as Justin was talking, which is, Justin, you talked about having a sense of comfort and familiarity with the practice, and you know, the practice of catalytic thinking and our values are meshed. And need to have, what does it take for them to have that sense of comfort and familiarity? And you talking about role play fits right in there. Practice fits right in there, Jess. Huge. Yeah. What else do people need in order to feel that comfort to go, this is my go-to. This is how I be. In you know, we talk so often that this is not a, you know, it's like you said, Justin, this is not a step-by-step prescriptive, this is what you must do. This is how we sort of be with others in the world. What does it take to have that sense of familiarity and comfort with catalytic thinking as a way of being, that this is your go-to? These are the questions I ask. John.
Two things came to my mind. One is, as we were talking, I remember when I first thought I wanted to teach at local college, they had me come in and do a 15-minute presentation, you know, and just on something related to what I was going for, what that looked like and how it felt. So I think that's one thing that would be good for us to be able to do. And then the second thing that came to my mind was, because so much of it, what Jess was saying, kind of caught my mind too, it's the style of who you are, right? And you know, the interesting thing is, different strokes for different folks, as they like. Style doesn't necessarily, everybody's not going to like my style. Everybody, it's not going to work with everybody. So being able to identify and kind of express who and what we are or looking at are, I think is going to be really important. But I also agree, you kind of have to believe in what we're doing. And I think that belief has to come. Anybody who knows me doesn't think that I think the world are creating a future. I just don't think anybody thinks that. And so you know, you have to kind of have that body and kind of character. You know, I like John Maxwell. I'm very much into leadership. I like this process because I really think it's the right way to move into the clearly that you know, I'm kind of like an acolyte of who and what we are, and not just a practitioner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that sounds right, but I think that's what I'm trying to get at.
I'm always glad we record these meetings, because my notes are, I can't think if I'm not writing, and then I look at what I wrote and I'm like, I don't know what this says. So it's, one of the other things that I really appreciated, you talking about, Justin, you almost said it in passing, and John, you were picking up on it, is that the practice has to be, somebody's practice needs to be rooted in creating change. And what catalytic thinking does is it focuses us on the change being out in community. And so many consultants are focused on changing processes internally without the external as a context. So yeah, we're focusing on you know, somebody needs help with their board, they need help with whatever. You're going to focus on the internal stuff. But if the community is not the context of that, then that's a direct conflict with our values. And I don't actually know, I haven't looked at our values in a long time. I don't know if it's actually stated in our values, but that context of community is so important. And do I know as a consultant, what do I do to ensure that my client's perspective is rooted in community and rooted in creating change, rather than I'm fundraising for the purpose of fundraising and I just need to beat my goals from last year. I remember decades ago when I was a consultant and people would say in strategic planning, and it was before we were even calling it community impact planning, I would be very, very upfront and say, I'm telling you, I have a bias. And my bias is that you all create change in the community. And that's my bias. And so I'm struck by that. And that is something that somebody would know, I guess, about themselves. Is it explicit? Or is it just sort of implied? Well, of course, I do work with boards. Obviously, the reason is because I want to see change in the world. Or is it, no, when I work with boards, I am very explicit about focusing them on community. So I'm just struck by that context. Let's flip then. There's good stuff happening in the chat and I'm missing it. All right. Carl, if they come in with solutions and not questions, they aren't a good fit. And Justin's got a crazy analogy. How much consulting is just changing the color of the candy shell? No question of why M&Ms, and then no alignment of what the candy center needs to be to achieve that. Yeah. 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 Or we could complain that the green M&M is no longer sexy, which I understand is a big issue these days. Not the important stuff in life. Your question, Carl, if they come in with answers versus questions, a group that I was going to suggest that we flip to, which is for creating the future as an organization, because we really can't separate. I mean, a lot of what we've been talking about is for us to notice and to help consultants notice.
We said that. Anyway, before we shift, yeah. Because I know Carl had some other thoughts at the top of this
that I wanted
to make sure we heard.
They're very mundane, and I'm going to lower the intellectual caliber of the conversation. But I think to come back to your question about expectations, I think that means that there has to be a conversation about incentives and rewards, particularly in the space that we're in. And I think we have to have an open and honest conversation about what are the sorts of rewards that consultants should expect when working in this area, because obviously, I mean, it's not market rates and so on. And we have a responsibility, I think, in terms of, and I think equally we need an honest conversation about what are our incentives in terms of who we recommend, okay? And the reason I say that is that many consultants will probably be used to working in a world where somebody is being paid to recommend someone, or someone is doing it for a reason that benefits them. And I think this is, which are, we want the people that are going to create the most community impact. So on. I'm not sure necessarily where sort of this is taking us, but I guess the point is that a bit wrong on boards are when people's expectations are not clearly set out, where there is a mismatch of who's doing what and why. And I just think that even though this conversation that we've had about an understanding of catalytic thinking is of course critical to anyone that we recommend. We shouldn't have mundane but still important expectations that have to be managed.
Yeah. What are other expectations that consultants will want to make sure are clear?
I mean, I don't know, this feels very like just again mundane, but like time, like right, like how much time you're expected to put into something, or what methods you're using to meet. It's kind of like that really practical logistical stuff that like you need to understand about what, I mean, if does somebody want, does a client want them in person, or is remote, does remote work, is it a long-term project, is it a one-time? But I also understand too, a lot of times like clients will request something, but they don't always, what they're requesting doesn't really fit what they, it doesn't really seem to fit what they actually need. So sometimes it's like on our end to kind of determine or help them figure out like where they're actually, what's actually the best course of action to like manage some goal, practicalities of it.
Well, that brought up just a whole, my brain just exploded again.
I think that there is that expectation that, you know, creating the future steps away as a go-between, mm-hmm. like that they're actually, there's direct contact. And I think to get at some of the things that Jess is talking about in terms of, you know, getting a sense of what the real understanding and scope is. I mean, I would hope that anyone who we engaged, I mean, that's the core of catalytic listening, right? But it actually makes me reflect back. I remember a program I was involved in where there was professional coaching as a part of it. And I kind of told, you know, we had a slate of coaches, and I told people, I said, talk, you know, and so I think, again, this is getting into some of the technicalities of it, but one is I would think for creating the future, we wouldn't want to do sort of just the one-to-one match, that we would actually in the ideal be able to say, you know, here are a couple of people you may want to talk to that are there. And I think that also speaks to kind of what Carl was saying in terms of what's the role of creating the future in the relationship building. And then I think, you know, as a consultant coming into creating the future, recognizing that part of the process, like, because that, not that I'm in competition with others, but I'm in consideration with others. And so I should expect that. I should expect that whomever is talking to me is actually talking to more people, because I might be able, but then someone else might do the same thing. And, you know, it's almost like I want people, I said, like, have you talked to like two other people? Because, you know, I want you to have their ideas and their approach next to mine, because any one of us could sound really flowery and great until you hear us next to somebody else.
A couple of thoughts, and then Carl, you mentioned the time commitment, Jess, and I'm thinking again, if we're the go-between, that's, you know, the time commitment is going to be about the consulting gig, but the time commitment piece to me is, we talked last time a little bit about the fact that creating the future, when we were looking at faculty development, we went from a qualifications model to a preparation model, where we will prepare people to teach. And if they don't, if they're like, you know what, I already know this stuff, then they've self-selected out. So a preparation model, and I'm thinking the same thing in terms of time commitment, when it comes to what is our process and how long does that take for me to become an approved consultant or whatever, to get on the list. So I think the time commitment goes in both of those directions. The other thought that's occurring to me, Justin, as you're talking, is, do we have somewhere, you know, on the website or whatever, that is who come to us asking about consultants? Here's what to expect from a consultant. Here's what Here's how to work with consultants. Here's, you know, just some real basics of talk to two or three people. Don't just go with one, et cetera. But it's making me think about the kinds of support we're talking about, support for the consultants. Is there also support that we might think about for the people asking for Carl and then Dimitri?
You sort of made my point for me. I was just going to say, as a consultant, I'd want to know that I was part of a community, mm-hmm. because I think that this is challenging work where we are all finding a way. And I think I would want a sense that there are people that I could talk to.
Yeah. Dimitri.
Justin, you early on talked about a client who presented a strategic plan that AI had generated. And this, following forward on this with the comments that were just made about educating and educates, not just for the consultant, you know, I'm thinking of like an FAQ around answering this, or what would AI give me? You know, I don't want to design a question that has the answer built into it, but so that people can really explore this. We're in a time right now where AI is everywhere. AI is doing everything. And I think the conversation around creativity and something that isn't just simply a conglomeration of everything that was done in the past, but the opportunity to do something new, to think differently for the community, with the community, I think that's really revolutionary in this time right now to think like that. Because because I'm in the tech world a lot, I'm just bombarded with all of the stuff that AI can do. And so it's really amazing, you know, what it can do. But it can't do what you were talking about, Justin, which is anything that it doesn't already know. So it has to go back and research all the other strategic plans. Well, this is a strategic plan. This is what it looks like, as opposed to, you know, what might creatively come out of a conversation with a community that no one ever thought of.
A couple more things that came up or came to mind is what happens to feedback from the client's end, like whether they give it to us as a consultant or giving it to creating the future, like where does that go? How is that lived? Or who wants it? Who wants to receive that feedback? And what is done with it if it's, you know, when it's received? I've lost it, so if I think about it,
we'll be back. that really sort of leads to the need for ongoing conversation with the clients, that it's not just drop them off and that's it.
I just remembered my other thought was, I understand, like, you know, the perspective of what does it mean to measure outcomes from our perspective or this perspective here, but on the flip side, a lot of clients like want to, you know, that, how do we kind of reckon those together on the front end? Because I think there's probably going to be a very difference. We've walked through this practice with you, you know, in terms of outcomes, like this is our perspective on it. This might be your perspective, but
That sort of made me think, and again, I apologize if some of this came up in the last conversation, but part of, I think, Jess, having seen and been parts of these kinds of referral systems in various ways, shapes, and forms, there's always this question, like, what is this going to do for, you know, the reputation of the referring agency? And it is, I think there's a part of me that's saying, we need to not be referring. We need to be connecting. Like, there is, like, it's framing this, because really creating the future should have no responsibility. Just like we say the board shouldn't be making decisions, the creating the future should have no responsibility for the nature of the engagement between the, you know, the person who gets referred and the organization. I think, just like we talk about the imperative to instruct, I think, you know, some of what people are talking about in terms of what needs to be done for the, hey, you know, we're putting here for you to do your due diligence. And I think some of that is potentially framing even some of this to say, here's someone who we know is a practitioner or who, you know, uses catalytic thinking, area that you are of interest in, you know, and maybe here's three or four, you know, and then really prepping them to say, like, you know, how we can communicate. Part of this is we don't want to be the proxy. We don't want to be the go-between, because that is actually not healthy in what we're trying. I mean, I know there's a lot of values embedded in that, but I kind of feel like, you know, while yes, we want to know from a more meta standpoint, like, what does the engagement of catalytic thinking around these or how that's working? I think to Jess's point, like, you know, is this working or are we actually all full of, you know, crap and maybe it doesn't work? Like, I do think that piece, but I think like figuring out how we shape this with the conditions that don't put creating the future on the hook for the engagement outcome, because it's not creating the future's responsibility, nor are we claiming sort of that, or would we would want to claim that. And you know, a lot of times it's propriety and control issues of the intermediary that's there. But I also think control is a crutch. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to do our due diligence because somebody said, you know, and I don't know. I've gotten really bad plumbers because someone said they were a good plumber and they were a friend of mine. And they said, oh, you said it was a good plumber. You had a good experience. I brought him in and it was crap. Like, wait, this is my home. This is my situation. This is my issue. And how do I build the relationship with the person I'm actually partnering with in doing this, not the relationship I have with, I'll stop now.
No, that it's, and I'm really grateful for that. Really, really, really grateful for that. You reminded me, Dimitri and I were actually reminiscing about this the other day. There was a time right before COVID, I think, that we were thinking about selling this house and eventually made the decision not to, but we wanted to talk to a couple of different real estate agents and we don't know real estate. And so we talked to somebody who said, oh, in terms of older homes, you got to talk to, I don't remember what her name was. She sat down and was absolutely offensive to us. The entire, I mean, like didn't just offend our sensibilities, like directly said things that were offending us as we sat there. And Dimitri and I, it was everything we could do to try and figure out how do we get this woman out of our house like now. And eventually called my friend back, just in terms of the plumber, called my, not a fit. She went, oh yeah, she's horrible. So every once in a while you got to figure out, is it just somebody who lives on your street or is it? But yeah, I'm really loving the thought of the delineation between referring and connecting, and what does that mean? We want to know about somebody that we are connecting because we still want to know, do they align with our values? Do they align with catalytic thinking? Are they experienced in catalytic thinking? And you know, as I was thinking before, in terms of our having some materials on the site that say, if you're, you know, and it could be the page that's got the connection/referral system on it, whatever, that says, if you're looking for a consultant, here's some questions that you want to consider as you're thinking about, just some resources.
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking about what is the follow-up? And by follow-up, I mean, what, and this is an expectation of creating the future. If we are an experiment, if we are doing demonstrations, this, I think, continues past this organization per se, in that, how did that engagement work out? How, you know, was it effective? What was the impact of catalytic thinking through that person on that entity, organization, and person? It would be nice to have the feedback in order to be able to provide that to other consultants, other people who are referred, and other organizations to address what you were talking about, Justin, is the bad plumber. You know, Better Business Bureau is, in theory, and it doesn't work that well, but in theory, how do we as a an organization, an entity who is asking for your help, how do you know that you have someone who's been referred other than just having a list of referrals, you know, referring names? So yes, there's a list of referring names, but here's some track record on these people, or more importantly, here's some outcomes that may or may not happen in your circumstance, in your organization.
Another thing.
Let's talk a little bit about creating the future's expectations, because I think that what we're really talking about here is, you know, Justin suggesting that we have as little as light a touch as possible, which I really resonates with me, in terms of what are we sort of responsible for? What can we be held responsible for? What do we want to be held responsible for? Is it referring? Is it saying, here, we recommend this person, versus is it just connecting and y'all figure it out? What kinds of expectations do we want to have of this process? Yeah, Carl.
I think we have to be bold enough
for whatever reason.
Oh.
Oh, is that me? Wait, do it again. Yeah, no, it was me.
I can hear you.
I have to turn off my speaker when Dimitri talks so that it doesn't.
I think we have to be bold enough to take responsibility for the method, for the approach. And I think we have to sort of accept responsibility for the fact that if it doesn't work, that's because working in every sort of situation. So in other words, if a consultant has an assignment and it doesn't quite work out, we can't just sort of say, well,
what other expectations do we want to have? And I think that whole piece about taking responsibility, what do we want to take responsibility for?
I was thinking about, like, kind of goes from the consultant side, but also from creating future side, is like, in part also talking about this, like, idea of, like, we don't necessarily want like a list of referral people, right? But how do you build up? I mean, does creating features want to, like, I'm assuming you want to kind of have all these people who are practiced and have the confidence in leading groups and organizations and such. How do you ensure there's, like, opportunity, or do you ensure that there's opportunity for people to do this? Because, you know, if you're kind of vetting or giving this, like, hey, this person had this consultant that has been, you know, has worked with this amount of clients and had these outcomes, then it starts to kind of, like, create this thing, right? You're creating, like, space between people who've been doing it versus newcomers who are trying, who also want to practice this, you know. So how is there space for, like, opportunities for people to get in and really practice this as
I'm scribbling. What you're bringing
sorry
up.
To interrupt.
Go, Auntie. I'm sorry.
Just thinking of building on that. I mean, I was just thinking. I don't like the way the term quality control, but I think it connects to what Carl's saying and what Jess is saying, is that we want to be accountable for ensuring that the people that are connect and approaches have some, right, like, background training, and there might be different levels, right, at which people are maybe more experienced or newer, and some kind of clear transparency around that, and some kind of, I don't know, seal of approval or something that says, you know, this person's, you know, had this kind of gone through this or had this many years experience or so on, so that we're making these connections. It's really just transparent about those items, I think, in some way.
Yeah. And in my mind, it comes back to the, are we qualifying people or are we preparing them? If we're qualifying them, we want to get, you know, three referrals and yeah, da, 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 da. If we're preparing them, the thought that was occurring to me as you were talking, Jess, is having, and you also, Carl, mentioned in terms of having community around you. Do we have an ongoing community of practice, which we've already got one or two of them and are thinking about building one or two more in the new year. Do we have a community of practice specifically for, you know, with the banner of, if you think you want to be a consultant who is part of our network, be part of this. And part of the preparation is that you are part of it, where you are role-playing, as Jess was suggesting, where you are, okay, we've got an issue this week. Let's start with this. And what are the questions that you would ask? What are the, so that folks are feeling prepared and again can self-select out. This isn't for me. And that might be too much. We might, you know, come up with other, that's just an idea. We might come up with other systems. But what's really resonating for me as we're talking is, do we, which gets to Justin's, are we referring, or are we connecting? Do we want to qualify people? What does that mean if we're qualifying versus preparing them and the to the best that we can and just being a connecting?
I don't think we want to be qualifying. Yeah, I think it
right.
It feels it, yeah, let's go back. That is not in alignment with the creating the future values, because that's a proprietary behavior and that's not kind of in our makeup. And it's a centralizing force. You know, Hildy, as you were talking about, you know, when we went through the initial sort of strategic alignment conversation, you know, one of the things we talked about was people having more places to practice and connect with others to do this. So I don't, you know, because I was, as we were talking, I was going, wait, this is like, we're talking about adding work. We're talking about adding structure that's centralized, that's not modeling the network. And I think it's going back to that commitment to create places where people who are curious have a place to practice and engage and be with others who are doing it and experimenting with it and catalytic thinking. They are then a natural breeding ground for people who want to flag themselves as, yes, I would be interested in, you know, receiving referrals practice. And then I think, you know, that builds up kind of the, you know, the database of who's curious. And then, you know, I don't think it is unrealistic to put forward a description of the kind of work that they do and how they do it. Like, it shouldn't be on creating the future, but to say, yes, okay, well, you know, if you feel comfortable and confident working with others and being aligned with him in the hat. And yeah, there is some formality of information that we ask people, whether it's just a statement or, you know, I mean, it can be very open-ended, but saying partner, connect with you, not through us, mm-hmm. that we can point them to say, hey, you know, I think Justin works in this space. You might want to go read his narrative, or, you know, or John's narrative.
Yeah. Carl.
That was very eloquent, Justin. Thank you. The way I was thinking about it is that the challenge of once you start to sort of do things like recommend people is that we are essentially productizing this. We are making it sort of, we potentially make people think that you can just buy a widget and it will work. And I think what I really like about the way Justin described it then is that the message that we want to send to people is that this is an emergent process, and the consultant who comes to you is someone who's going to guarantee that it will work, because that's just not how strategic planning in our sector works. It's, as you say, community impact planning instead. When we last met, I sort of said this, and sorry if I'm repeating myself, but just more practically, once you start recommending people at that point, then you have to deal with the recourse if it does go wrong. And so then you're getting into things like having insurance and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know, that's not us.
It's not only not us. And I like the fact that Justin, you're talking about structure or not needing a structure, that if we were to do the qualifying side, the recommending side, that is setting up structures. We're aiming at dismantling all of our structures in the next several years. So the last thing we want to do is build lots of structures. It's one of the reasons that I really wanted us to have this conversation, and I'm grateful for it over the past couple of meetings, because it's real easy to go down that rabbit hole of this is the way you do it. And that's always about building structures and building control and building, it becomes, as you mentioned, Dimitri, very proprietary, and it really does not feel like us, especially if what we're talking about is not being here 2-3 years from now. Yeah, Justin.
So what happens when we just reframe this as, what does it take for someone to make a referral to someone else? Because I'm thinking, you know, if, I mean, one is
the what you're talking about, Hildy, which is, okay, if the structure of creating a future sort of, you know, slowly dissipates and we have a network, then we really are starting to talk about people referring people, not creating the future referring people. And I think about my own experience where I get approached by someone and either it's a fit and I don't have the capacity and they're saying, well, do you know somebody? It's not a fit or it's an area that I'm not interested in. I think, you know, what you were saying, Hildy, just sort of threw me to that. Like, are we asking the wrong question in a way? Is the question really, what does it look like to provide for people to provide trusted referrals to other people?
Carl noted in the chat. So we're not developing a referral process. We're talking about how do we bring people into the community and how do we set norms about helping others?
I'm going to say something that has nothing to do with what Justin and Carl just said, but I'm definitely on that. I like that line of thinking. But I know that y'all haven't really, like, you don't really feel worried about if people are like using catalytic thinking and not citing or giving some kind of credential or like citation or, you know, asking for permission or anything like that. So already people could be like going to a catalytic thinking catalog and trainings and just being like, I'm a consultant and I use, you know, catalytic thinking in my work, right? So like as it is, people could be doing that already and not be part of these communities of practice or be part of this work like right now. So just to kind of put that out there, that people might already
absolutely
be doing that.
Absolutely. I know for a fact that they are. And as a matter of fact, before meeting you, Jess, in your introduction to us, it was the fact that you've been using catalytic thinking in the work that you're doing. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a part of what we're talking about, and I love this peer-to-peer is really what we're talking about, is identifying those people who are already in the network, who are already playing with this, and we just don't know. Yeah, John.
Yeah, I think two thoughts. This idea of having a community where people who, like Jess, myself, you know, we talk about it already. I mean, you know, we do. So I think it'd be great to have a community where, you know, we're having conversations where people can continue to compare stuff. But one of the things that I'm really thinking about, and you know, I was trying to figure out how to tactfully say this, is I almost always go to these groups and not a lot of people look like me. And so, like, my question often is, you know, this all sounds really good. And by the way, when I share this with people of color, they love it. I mean, it's like, wow, this is, you know, this has opened up opportunity for me, blah, 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 blah. But it's not something. So when we talk about community, I think we have to look at both sides of that. That's the practitioner community, but also the client community and trying to get them connected in, because like me. And that's kind of what I've been sitting here thinking about. You know, all of this sounds really good, right? But I know lots of very talented and gifted and wise and people who I love to have to see practicing this. And I want to think about how do we do that? That's kind of where my head is a little bit.
And it's kind of why the last meeting I mentioned that there are like community organizers and stuff who do a lot of like do parts of this. And that's why I'm really interested in how this kind of helps, especially because it's such an academic kind of focus on this in some ways, as well as like how do we kind of do this with funders and organizations generally. But there are a lot of organizers. I was just actually in this project I'm working on, I was talking to somebody who did this with an organizer where they did this like kind of dreaming piece, which I've done with people as well, of like, what's your vision? If you know, public safety, right? Like, what does it mean to be safe in your community? Like, what does it feel like? What does it sound like? And that very much aligns with catalytic thinking. You know, this, you're already there. How did you get there? I learned that well before I found catalytic thinking. And that is done in a lot of Black and Brown spaces and a lot of groups that have really want to highlight what you said, John, because I absolutely feel that there are people doing parts of this. They don't have the whole background, like the science and stuff that you bring into it, Hildy. And there's also not always a connection with those kind of like more institution, like higher institutions as well, but people are doing this on a regular basis, and it makes sense because of the same reasons why you've like outlined very well in this framework, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the reasons that, it's another part of one of the reasons why I wanted us to be talking about this is with a small pool of people because we haven't invited. We haven't said, hey, consultants, if you're doing this, come, we want to talk. We haven't done that. What I wind up doing when somebody sends us a note saying, can you help us with whatever, is I just keep going to the same three or four people because they're the same three or four people who are on the list. That's not helpful. That's not expanding. That's not casting the wider net. That's not, it's all coming through Hilde, which is not a good thing. And it's very, very limited. It's very limited. And so a big part of what is arising here is casting that net more broadly, so that everybody feels like if they're hiring somebody, they're hiring somebody who is a fit in a lot of different ways. And frequently we get requests. We want a consultant of color. We want a consultant who has experience in this kind of Indigenous community. Part of what creating, as we're talking about, okay, what are creating the future's expectations, is that we have a net that includes anybody that somebody might want.
So I'm a little bit, I guess, partly hung up on the fact that we're talking about consultants, because it seems like baked into consulting is this right relationship where you're purchasing someone's time to help you do something, right? So different than that, it seems to me. So I don't know fully what it means, but I think I'm getting hung up with, like, it's very hard for us to have, like, say, a portal of consultants without some kind of quality assurance there. But if we're talking about connecting people who have skills, right, about to help with certain things that may or may not be purchased, I'll give you time for this. If you give me time for that, training, different ways that that can be engaged in particular, as we were just talking about, there's people already doing this work in a lot of different contexts that don't probably necessarily think of themselves as consultants either. I don't know. Maybe we need to think about the language that we're using around that, perhaps.
I think Justin's comments.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if social workers actually just did organizational development, we'd be in a much better place. I mean, it's like, there is nothing more social than an organization. That's what it's organizing, essentially. But I think, you know, Andrea, I think actually that, like, that is kind of the tough nugget that, I can just speak from my own perspective. Like, I really lean into the language around partnership. Yes, there is a transactional component, but I'm actually a partner and part of a collective capacity when I'm working with an organization. Like, I'm not trying to be the that then is negotiated. Like, if you need to pay me to help provide you and you're not going to build up the capacity, you know, that's sort of one model. Sometimes it's episodic. But I think that it is important to acknowledge, yeah, there are times when people want, I mean, the reason they're coming and they're asking for a referral is because they actually do want the shortcut. And I think we need to acknowledge that in terms of what the client needs, is they do need some shortcuts because they don't have the time and energy to fully vet. And so I think, some of this may be, in what you're talking about, Angie, is just even thinking through that, like, what's everybody's understanding of what their expectations around that partnership are. Carl, you talked there to be a partner, and there is a compensation component to it. That's what allows me to be able to be present and do this work. I think there will be others where that is, going to be a different parameter. But I do think that defining it so it's not just so that the parameters around this are most likely going to be some sort of an episodic engagement with somebody, for a particular need that the client is feeling. Like, I always say, unfortunately, the work I do, it's like more often than not, people don't call me because everything's okay. So there's already anxiety and forward with when they get to me.
Yeah. And I like Jess's comment in the chat that when the title consultant doesn't fit what a lot of people are doing, there's words like practitioner, like guide, like I was thinking facilitator, And a lot of people, when they're getting hold of us, frequently what they're asking for is somebody to facilitate or somebody to do a workshop. Those are the two that we get a lot. And I'm really liking the sort of the old as simple as it needs to be, yet no simpler. There's something here about, because, you know, all of us, the problem with getting a whole bunch of smart people in the room is all of us could get an absolute A in making anything more complicated. I think we're all really, really good at you give me 10 minutes, I can make anything more complicated. But I think stripping this down to what is as simple as possible and no simpler than that. And simple being that role of connector and saying, I don't know if they're good. I know that they say that they have experience in catalytic thinking. They're part of our community of practice, let's say, if that happens. And that's it. And you do your due diligence and make sure that you talk to three or four people. And I mean, I think that there's something here about making this as simple as possible. I don't know what simple would include, but I think it's probably easier to ask what can we exclude from that. And there's something about checking somebody's qualifications and checking the referrals and checking all that's the stuff we want the client to do. You know, it might be, do you have referrals? Do you have people that you will be able to send a client to? Could be a checkbox. Yes, I do. But I'm just wondering how much of what we're talking about we can strip off to still provide what we want to provide, which is we want to have a process for connecting the people who want facilitation and training to the people who can do it. And what is at the essence of that? What has to happen? I think what we're talking about is a lot of it would be nices, but what are the must-haves? What are the absolute must-haves? And maybe it's time to be talking then in our last time together here about the clients. So the prospective clients, again, one of the lines that came up in absolutely everybody that we were talking about is clear expectations. I highlighted it in everybody's clear expectations, values assurance, integrity and quality, and trust were the things that I saw in what we thought that this process could make possible for prospective clients. What are the clients? What do we want the clients' expectations of creating the future as the recommending, referring, connecting entity? What are their expectations of us, not of the consultant, of us?
I mean, just real off the bat, it's like just some kind of follow up or follow through on something, right? Like something happens if they reach out. But I guess not to make this complicated, but like, what does that mean if creating the future is intended to like break down all the structures, right? In the next few years, like, what does that mean? What does it look like?
Yeah, Carl.
I wonder if there's a sort of a conversation about what their expectations are and what we want their expectations to be. And essentially what I think I'm sort of trying to sort of suggest here is that I think in reality, people's expectations of us are that we are a shortcut, that we're going to save them time, that we're going to do work for them so that they don't have to do it. Because, you know, we want to get home in the evening and so on. But I think what we want people's expectations to be might be a little bit different. We want people to be more discerning, almost, to sort of focus on values and to take sort of consultants who will sort of work alongside them. But I wonder if that's what human beings are really like.
I know that the people who do connect with us, are, again, you know, as we talked about, Jess, as you've mentioned several times, they've been playing with this and this resonates with them. They're either following our newsletter, they've taken a class or something. This resonates with them. They know that they want a facilitator or a trainer about catalytic thinking. thinking through the lens of catalytic thinking, if they're facilitating, and they don't know where to find somebody. And so I think that it could be as simple as their expectation is that we have a pool of people who are facilitating using catalytic thinking.
Kind of what we've talked about is that recognizing that like our pool is not the entire pool, right? Like there's a lot of people out there that we don't know about in here. So is that something to put on the front end of like, there's, we do, like creating features cannot, right? Like, so is that something to be upfront about in some way? Or like, what do we do with that? Like recognizing that we don't have, we can't, like there, as of right now, there's no possible way that we know all the people who can do this.
Right. And we've actually never asked our community, even just our newsletter list, which is, you know, 5,000-6,000 people, are you practicing this and would you be interested in being connected up with other people who might be looking for that? We've never asked. We've never asked. We have a Facebook group for consultants to nonprofits. They are just consultants to nonprofits. They're not necessarily following catalytic thinking. Many of them have no idea who Creating the Future is. We've just seen that it's important for people to have community and build community among nonprofit consultants. It's a Facebook group. We've never asked them, do you want to add catalytic thinking to your consulting? Do you want to play? So not having asked the question, we don't even know who's in our immediate realm, Jess, who's already practicing catalytic thinking. So part of what, as I said, part of what I think the client's expectation is that we have a pool. We've never asked. We know the people who bring themselves forward like you, Jess, who say, I'd love to sit in this meeting. I'd love to be part of this. We know the people who volunteer themselves forward, but we've never asked in any big way, do y'all want to come to the party? And it could be as simple as that. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, how simple is it? Okay, here's a list of people who say they're practicing catalytic thinking. We offer them the opportunity to be part of a community practice so that they feel that sense of community and support, because I think, several of you have mentioned community. And one of the things that was mentioned last time in what a process can make possible for the consultants is ongoing educational opportunities. I'm wondering if it is as simple as that. Those folks just, you know, get themselves on a list and we ask them, you know, what kinds of things do you want to consult in? And we give that list to whomever. Are you doing work online? Or are you only doing work in person? I mean, some of the real like basic logistical questions, so that if somebody says, you know, can they come to Australia? We know that it's not the person who only wants to work online or only wants to work in their tiny little town in Michigan. What's bubbling for you guys?
This might be like a completely ridiculous thing to ask, but why? Okay, so you have somebody who reaches out who's like, we're looking for a consultant, a trainer, somebody to like help with this, right? Why is it that, not why, I think why is that is not the right word to use, but just go with me here. Why aren't they then like involved or enveloped into the catalytic thinking as opposed to like, we're going to just like, dispatch somebody to, you know what I mean? Like, whereas like they want somebody who's just going to give them an answer. A lot of people are looking for consultants to like give an answer, give a solution. So that's why I think why is not the right word there, but there's something about that. It's like, okay, you're coming in, you're saying you want to do catalytic thinking in your organization. You want to learn it. There's resources available on the website. You get involved like anybody else gets involved about dispatching somebody to you to walk you through. Like, what is that do? That's where I'm at. It's like there's a difference there, obviously, right? But like, yeah, why aren't they involved too? I don't know.
That's the I think the result of the consulting industrial complex. They've been conditioned just to, you know, not develop the capacity internally, but to actually just, you know, go get it somewhere. And I think that is it's a for-profit mentality where there are nonprofits that don't have actually the resources, A, to engage that person, and B, actually the time and capacity and flex to internally develop. So it's kind of a catch 22, which is why I think there's so much anxiety, is because they have this inkling of, I want that, but now I have no idea how to actually get that. I do think, going back to really grounding ourselves in, what's the reality that they're going through when they're asking for this? And I mean, they ask for it and they don't even understand what they're asking for. And then when you start to explain what's involved, they kind of, it's like deer in the headlights, like, wait, you're actually asking. So they, key to this is you're actually going to do the work. I'm just facilitating it. But I think there is something that we need to acknowledge, that it is people who are looking for oftentimes the quick piece. The person is not always representative of the culture and nature of the organization, particularly around this. I mean, I think I might be batting 1,000. Quite clear that it's not been an organization-wide decision to engage in this kind of work, that it is somebody who says, I like this, I want to do this. And then it is oil and water in so many instances. And that's a whole nother level. That's just the referral. It's too much to put on any one in creating the future to have to do that kind of vetting. And that's how you're going to know whether a client or whether a consultant or a practitioner actually is good at this, is they're going to be able to engage someone in talking through what the reality of doing it is. And the person asking for the engagement's got to trust that person. They can't trust the referral, because like I said, I honestly, maybe I'm batting, it is rare that particularly someone new who I'm engaging with understands what I'm even talking about. And there is, every time there is a moment where it is like, well, are we going to continue or not? Because it's not what you expected. Like, are you in or are you out?
One of the some of the words that have come up in this conversation repeatedly is comfort and confidence. And I think that when, in my experience, people who have been watching and learning and taking our classes, there is this leap that they still don't. Why in our newsletter, we're constantly, just try this one question. Just play with a question. You don't have to look at everything. Just try one tiny little question. There is someone who has been introducing this into their classes. They teach at a university level, has been introducing this into their classes, has been in correspondence with us pretty much every time we have a newsletter. This is really resonating with me. I invited this person to a meeting that we've got coming up in the next couple of weeks. And they said, I don't think I'm qualified. And the eventual upshot of it was, you have been taking our classes, you've been listening, but there's that sort of leap of personal confidence of, the result was, they're eventually saying, I think I'll attend the meeting because I need to put my toe in at some point. And so I think that frequently, and to Justin's point, we have so ingrained culturally that if you need something, you go get it outside. That is the business mentality. You get a consultant, you get an expert. What we're talking, and you may need somebody who understands the nuances of the law related to boards and governance. You may need somebody who actually understands the nuances of a particular funding mechanism. But what we're talking about here is really just facilitating group interaction towards a community-focused goal. And we don't make that distinction. We in the nonprofit world don't make that distinction. We make the distinction of, if we need something, we have to go out and get it. We don't have the skills internally. It is 10 minutes till the hour. I'm going to encourage all of us. This has been an intense conversation and I've deeply appreciated it. Let's take a deep breath in and out. And let's talk about what's standing out to you from our conversation today. If you've taken any notes, if you want to circle anything that's standing out to you, and let's share some reflections.
Shall I go first to kick us off?
Go, Carl.
So my first reflection is about these conversations as a process. and how I think my view changes over the course of them, and how the conversation changes my mind. And you know, I mean, there is a sort of, there's something there, isn't there, about the nature of what we do in terms of asking questions. You know, it's a process, sort of a discovery. And in that sense, for me, I think I was at the beginning thinking about, okay, well, how do we design a process and so on? And over the course of the conversation, I think my mind has switched to actually, this is not about using the word consultant. We're saying to people that they need consultants. I think it's about saying about how do we find people in our community that can walk alongside us and can share our journey. And sometimes we have to be honest and say that they need to be remunerated for that because they've got bills to pay and all that sort of stuff. And so then the second thing that sort of just occurred to me at the end was, I don't quite know when this happened, but sort of in our sector, sort of in the UK, a bit like in the sort of the US and so on, it's we've had funders forever that have been saying to us, you have to evaluate your program and you need an evaluator. And I don't know when this was, 5 years ago, maybe a bit longer, the language chink, just talking about you need to do monitoring and evaluation. And instead we started to talk about learning. And now what you see is that organizations are some of the better organizations, some of the better grant makers, they've stopped advertising for evaluators. And instead they now advertise for learning partners. So this idea that we want someone to walk alongside us. And I think that's what we are talking about.
Wow, thank you. A whole lot to think about in that.
Well, I'll follow up because I think, you know, Carl, you are hitting on, I mean, not only your own personal journey, but just how oftentimes these conversations force us to rethink the assumptions that we're holding. I mean, that's the beauty of analytic thinking, really, at its core. And I think, and I think we know, Angie, I just really so appreciate you like putting that in space, like, well, wait a second, because I think that does sort of indicate, like, okay, like, what are those underlying assumptions that we're making about what we're calling people and what this, a different way that organizations actually engage in this work, doing, you know, having the capacity, you know, as is so common with us, we're finding that we're having to actually redefine what's really at the heart of that, that this really connection that can be, you know, negotiated between those parties, and that the third part, you know, this whole third party model, I mean, you know, like if we want to get really esoteric, it's like the whole third party referral model, like it is a convenience, which I think is necessary on it as a trust system, whereas really it's just a connection system. And we need to figure out how to facilitate the trust. Because I think, Dimitri, some of what you were talking about is like, how do we help the potential consultants? How do we help the potential connection and partnership so that they get what they need, both sides of it? And so I think, yeah, that's pushing the whole idea of even just what an engagement looks like between a consultant and a client. I mean, that in and of itself, as well as the potential role that creating future plays in building that trusted connection.
It's big stuff. Yeah, John.
You know, I thought about two things. Because as we, what kind of prompted this is our conversation about what's going to happen when creating the future goes away in 2 years and that kind of, but I don't really think it's about going away. I think there's transition taking place organizationally. And I think this is a stage we're trying to define. And I think we have to figure out what that stage is and then what our role will be in that stage. And I think those are the questions we've been trying to answer. But I do think that it does have the steps we take now, you know, to prepare for that, but also it may impact who carries that legacy forward. How does that get carried forward? And I think the word that kept coming to my mind is like a community of practice, just this idea of those three things, that's transition stages and this idea of building a community.
Absolutely. Who else?
Go ahead.
Can't hear you.
I can't hear you. Your headphones, something happened with your headphones? Can you hear me? Can everyone hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
So this I'll
not me.
Yes, I'll go, Jess, and then you can jump in once you're. So I now I'm building on all that I've been thinking about. That with this work, as Justin talked about, you know, it's oftentimes about people that want to do this work. I don't really want to use the term client work. helping support them to do the work, to build the capacity to do the work right themselves, or like embed it in the organization. And that is not consulting as much as maybe it's something else, right? Like coaching or solidarity in some way. And so much, like so many reasons, the reason we need so many consultants these days, it seems like, is because organizations don't want to invest in their own people, being able to build that whole consulting system sort of creates a system of where organizations are anemic, right? To being able to do kind of this work and this change work. And so I guess all that's to say, like, how can we help create some kind of system of connecting that will help people find their, yeah, the community of people that can then support them in building that capacity. I was thinking as we were talking, like recently I had to get a mobile notary to come and do some paperwork for us. And because we're new to Connecticut, like we don't know anybody, we had to, you know, had to find somebody who could come here to my office because I had to have witnesses for our, you know, sell our estate planning and so on. And there was like a whole stem of people saying, I can do this. Other people who've, you know, made comments about their, you know, how their connections were. This is not a perfect example, but I can imagine like there's some kind of other that enables all this kind of connecting to happen, but maybe not in such a customer kind of service oriented way. But anyway, that's all. I'm going to turn.
We embed Craigslist into our website.
There's some downsides maybe to that, but.
I like it. Oh, we can hear you, Jess. Good.
Yeah. I mean, I am like kind of sitting with the discussion about creating referral processes in part started because you had people reaching out being like, we want this, right? But then we're kind of, our first inclinations are to respond to it in a way that's always been done, like the conventional, like, you know, this is how people establish systems, referral, like this is how it's done generally. And then, but trying to figure out how to think about this in a way that's like really makes sense and brings in the whole picture. And I was like, I had just watched the meeting that y'all had when you even came up with the idea of integrity board. And like that, basically you kind of came back to like, wait, this seems like simple. We should have just known to do this already, but it just took so long of like unlearning and going through all these like ways of doing things that were kind of just like conditioned to do that, to come back to like the initial have already been makes sense, but you have to kind of like siphon away all the layers of what's been put on to like what's been put onto this process, to a process, like even the word process, right? Like is itself like a word that we just typically use. So, and trying to like get through all of that, but at the same time, you're trying to create your own kind of, not create your own language, but like use different language or expand your like think through or take on other like perspective, other ways of doing this. Because this is a very multidisciplinary, or like you use all these different kind of concepts to come up with catalytic thinking, or to kind of present it as like, this is why it makes sense, right? So it sounds like that's what I'm just kind of sitting with in this conversation, is like we're trying to take away some of this language, but also we're kind of stuck with it because where we easily grasp onto, where our brains go, what our experiences have been. So yeah, so it's just kind of like this, like.
Yeah. Vu loves to tell the story of the kindergartners that were told to draw a fish, that half the room was told draw a fish and they just drew all kinds of fish. And the other half the room was told to draw a fish. And here's an example of what a fish might look like. And everybody in that group drew that fish. And that really is so much of what you're talking about, Jess. Just that we start with where we are, where our heads are stuck in that cultural meme, and move beyond that.
Jess, I really appreciate what you were saying. It ties in with what everyone is saying. Carl, I love how these conversations just, you know, they get to like the destination that you weren't aware you were going to. Yeah, we are suddenly here, and it so much of it now makes sense that didn't before. A couple of other things, when Justin, you were talking about the consultant industrial complex and how people have an expectation of what they should do, what they should have. And I'm thinking about it in the context of health, that what we're sort of asking people is to take charge of their own health. that you don't need the expert at every point in your life to tell you, you need to do this, you need to do that, or I will do this for you, or I will do that for you. So I'm sort of thinking about this process in that context with the umbrella of what is our purpose? Our purpose is to make this ubiquitous. You know, it's not that we go away or that we stay or whatever, but the real purpose is that this process of catalytic thinking, and just I'll use the word process of catalytic thinking, these steps are what we, that's what we want, is we want people to be using this where we don't even know that they're using it. I mean, they don't tell us that they're using it. And so that's very different when you think about it in that context with that lens on.
Yeah. And I know we're running late. I will very, very quickly share my two. First of all, I'm so grateful for the conversation and the fact that we're coming back to something that is much, much more simple, because like I said, we're really good at making things much more complicated. What you brought up for me, Jess, in your reflection is that when we look at, when we go through the questions of catalytic thinking, and we always start with the thing. So the thing, this case, the thing was creating a class for a group. I've seen this happen so many times at this point that I wish I could, it doesn't surprise me anymore, but it still elates me that because what we do is we start with the thing and then we immediately ask what that thing will make possible. And what we're reverse engineering is not the thing, but the possibility. And it always takes us to a place that we didn't think we were going to go. And it's very, very frequently not the thing, that because what is this, what we aim at is this. We aim at the thing because it's what we know. And when we reach for what we really want and we create the conditions for that, it so frequently isn't the thing that we thought it was. It is something else because we're actually aiming at what we really want rather than some representation or means to the end. What we're actually aiming at is the ends and not the means to the end. And the thing is always just the means to the end. And that's why I think it feeling so good that no, it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be very, very simple. And it can be about our values, our building network, building community, and making, as you said, Dimitri, making sure that these questions are ubiquitous, that they are everywhere. And that doesn't happen by our being the centralized referral agency. Thank you all. This has been energizing and much, much to think about. Much to think about. Deeply appreciate all of you. We will not see you in November. Dimitri and I will be traveling, enjoying friends and family.